Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to episode 316 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, deep into the night on Sunday into Monday, and I'm joined by Eric Cole to celebrate, commemorate, mark, whatever word you want. The Braves now lead the NLCS by 2-0 margin against the Dodgers. Hello, sir.
Brad, I appreciate you coming on to talk with me about baseball. I know you've been traveling a whole bunch. I have also been kind of traveling a whole bunch, so we're kind of a bit of the walking wounded tonight. But if we're going to talk about a game together late at night as two old people, I'm excited to be able to talk about this one with you, that's for sure.
Yeah, obviously complete madness in this one, back and forth, kind of in similar fashion to game one. The Dodgers have now led three separate times in the series in two games and have lost both games. The Braves have just kind of come back, and we'll go through it all as we always do. But Eddie Rosario, the big hero of the night in multiple ways, clearly has the walk-off with a little bit of a hat tip to Corey Seager at shortstop. The first back-to-back walk-offs for the Braves in the playoffs since 1991 in the World Series, shades of Mark Lemke.
I remember that series well.
Yeah, shades of Mark Lemke. Shouts to the Lemmer. But four hits for Rosario, all singles. And he, by the way, the first player with four hits and a walk-off hit in a playoff game since some guy named David Ortiz in 2004. I'm not sure what happened in that playoff run for that player and that team. But
Was he good?
Yeah, he seemed to be pretty good. So, you know, they win this game with all of the heroics from Austin Riley and Eddie Rosario and the bullpen. They beat Max Scherzer, who was not, like, terrible, but wasn't quite his dominant self. And we will talk about Ron Washington and the Ron Washington game throughout this podcast
good
as well.
God.
Heart-stopping, as always,
Ron,
for Wash.
But green light Washington.
Yeah, Ron has never thrown up a stop sign in his entire career, and it worked out in this spot. So plenty to get to, but honestly, clearly a lot of fun. And before we dive in here, I guess I'll ask you, I mean, there were lots of references to, like, magic on Twitter this evening. Obviously, you don't want to get over your skis too much. This is the same team that lost to this same team last year with a 3-1 lead in the same series, so you don't want to go too crazy, but it does feel pretty exciting at the moment with a lot breaking right for the Braves in a way that doesn't always happen.
Yeah, and it's, you know, when I talked about this series when we did the preview show with Sean, and I've been kind of talking about it elsewhere, it's that it felt like that the Braves pitching staff was just going to have to bend but not break, and the offense was going to have to come up with big hits in big spots. And so far, that is held true. If you told me that through the first two games, the Dodgers would score a total of six runs, I would think the Braves would have a really good shot to at least be 1-1, if not 2-0 in this series. Especially when you throw in, like, a bullpen game in game one, right? And it's been, I mean, there's so many, like, little micro, like, each inning in this game was completely wild in its own little microcosm of, like, you know, like, things that were happening, what went right, what went wrong. But that the Braves are winning this series 2-0 with Ian Anderson throwing three innings and Freddie Freeman forgetting how to hit a baseball altogether blows my mind. Like, truly blows my mind. And they've done it a lot of different ways, you know, with, you know, from big home runs to, you know, Eddie Rosario becoming a small ball genius and, you know, scoring on wild pitches and, you know, gymnastic slides and things like that. I wish I knew what to say beyond that. I kind of get it. I kind of get the whole team of destiny thing. It was funny. I texted Scott before the preview show because I was trying to get your predictions, and you know, in your cowardice, you refused to do so. But Scott texted me, Braves in seven. This is the team of destiny. Now, for Scott to say that is kind of wild. Now, he also picked Freddie Freeman as series MVP, and that's not going to happen unless something crazy happens in the next few games. But it just there, everything this season that could have gone wrong basically did go wrong. Then they roar back and are one of the best teams after the trade deadline, and they completely outplay the Brewers. And through these first two games, they just made it happen. They just made it work. Last night it was Austin Riley doing Austin Riley things. Fun fact: Sean was actually calling his shot of Austin Riley walk off for episode number 316, which is this one with the nice wrestling reference to the Stone Cold 316 crowd. He was one game off, so you know, hat tip to Sean for getting it almost right. And you know, back to back walk offs in the playoffs is just wild in itself. These games have been super close, and the Braves have, like, other than like, as opposed to what happened earlier in the season where it seemed like every close game things just didn't go the Braves' way. In these games, like a bad base running error in game one, like keeps the run off the board for the Dodgers, and they walk that game off. The Braves walk it off rather, and then in this game, the Dodgers seemingly had two runners on base every single inning, and they just kept plugging away and kept it close, and then they end up walking this one off. At the end of the day, this is the Dodgers. They could easily win the next four games, and we're going to talk about what might have been, but you know, for these first two games, it's been pretty special.
Yeah, it has been, and we'll clearly get into everything that transpired in this one. You mentioned the all the left on base by the Dodgers. I'm not even sure what the final count was. I know it was 10 at one point in like the seventh inning. Might have even been more than that by the end, and they just couldn't get it going. And the Braves managed to make some big plays. So we'll dive in now to what actually transpired in this one. We'll pick our spots as to how we want to go deep. But I guess we got to start here. If I tell you before the game starts, Eric, this is a favorite convention of mine. If I tell you a certain thing before the game starts, what happens? And if I tell you that the score is 2-0 Dodgers within five pitches, you got to think the Braves are pretty big underdog in that spot, given Scherzer's on the mound and all that stuff. And that's what happened in this game. A first pitch, two-run homer by Corey Seager to kind of stun the home crowd, stunning Anderson. And obviously, Ian's not ever his – well, I should say ever. He's rarely his best in the first inning, and that was the case here. But it definitely wavered out of the gate.
Yeah, and Ian struggled with a lot of things. The first thing was kind of – it set the tone for the night. His command of his fastball was kind of all over the place. The velocity was there, so you could kind of get away with it. But the thing that was, like, even more concerning was with the breaking ball, you know, it not only was the command off, but he was, like, leaving it fat. And, like, against this Dodgers team, you just can't leave, like, a 73-mile-an-hour curveball just down the middle. It's going to get hit really, really hard by basically their entire lineup. Combine that with just, like, I mean, Corey Seager is just basically Thanos against the Braves, it seems like. And it's – that was a pretty brutal start to the game, to be sure. Just all of a sudden having those two guys just immediately account for two runs. And, you know, it took him forever to get out of that inning. He threw almost 30 pitches. I will say that, you know, after the top of the first, it didn't feel great, and there was already like bullpen activity in ninth inning, which, you know, shouts to, you know, the Braves for, you know, understanding that they might have to, you know, get the hook out pretty quickly. But even when the Braves went down in like 1-2-3 in the bottom of the inning, like you could tell that like Max wasn't quite right either. You know, he just like wasn't locating his pitches. You know, when he's like, when he misses, it's just a little bit here and there, like a little bit outside, a little bit high, a little bit low. But he was like missing pretty badly in some spots, and they kind of got bailed out by some bad swings from the Braves. You know, Freddie Freeman just looked completely flummoxed against him. But it didn't feel like Max was going to be like throwing seven or eight innings, like even from the first inning. It just didn't seem like it was going to be that sort of game. So I was a little bit heartened by that. But, you know, ultimately, what would come down to is whether or not Ian could settle down, and you know, whether or not the Braves' offense could get anything done. But that first inning definitely wasn't a great feeling.
Yeah, and just to put a couple of numbers on it, Ian's ERA this year in the first inning is 6.38. So it wasn't like a shock to see him stumble out of the gate. But he had he was not in his best place, as you kind of alluded to. And you know, famously, he had a sub one ERA in the playoffs career coming into today. No longer the case.
Yeah, career in quotation marks.
Yeah, I think it was five starts, whatever it was. But
yeah.
Regardless, it could have been worse, honestly. They did a decent job, I would say, avoiding further damage. It could have got broken open, you know, not really to his credit, but Anderson kind of missed middle to Bellinger. And he didn't capitalize on it. Just kind of barely missed it on for the final out of the inning. And it could have been worse, honestly, than 2-0. So that's worth putting a pin in. Kind of quiet from that point forward for a little bit, although Anderson did bounce back and pitch much better in the second. You know, Johan Camargo makes an appearance in the third inning.
That's not where you want to be in the National League Championship Series. In the third inning, Johan Camargo's the first bat off the bench. Yeah.
I mean, they used we can fast forward, but they used everybody in this game. I guess technically, Contreras didn't have to come in, but he was going to come in, and they were going to have nobody on the bench if this game went to extra innings. So it was early, often, and busy. Managerially in this game on both sides. Both Robertson and Snicker were busy, let's just say, in this contest. But the first big swing of the evening for at least in Atlanta's favor was in the fourth inning. After they go away from Anderson, they bring in Chavez, who actually pitched quite well in the fourth inning. Riley walks, and then Jock Peterson gets some Dodgers revenge off of Scherzer. A 454-foot majestic blast from Jock Peterson.
Absolutely destroyed into the clubhouse. Just annihilated.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has 12 or 13 home runs career in the postseason, dating back to his time with the Dodgers. This is the longest of his career. And, I mean, 112 miles an hour. I'm not even sure. I mean, if you haven't seen the play, I would just recommend watching it. But we'll try to describe it just by saying what we just said. Like, it was absolutely annihilated. And, you know, it wouldn't matter if it was just 1 foot over the wall or 50 feet over the wall, but it was 50 feet over the wall and an absolute no-doubter. And to do that off Scherzer when you're, you know, it wasn't like it was over or anything, but you're down 2-0 and one of the best pitchers of the last 15 years is on the mound, to have that that deficit erased with one swing is, I'm sure, inspiring and kind of lifted the rest of the boat there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from a morale perspective, you don't want to feel like you got punched in the mouth in the first inning and you want to feel like you can like keep pace with them offensively, which is what I kind of get back to is just, I felt like the key for the Braves in this series is just, they're going to have to keep pace offensively. Because if you look at the lineups versus what the Braves are trotting out there, I mean, the guys that are at the bottom of the Dodgers lineup could be batting cleanup for a lot of teams. You know what I mean? Like, and so you have to just be able to keep pace with them, you know, in some respect. And, you know, when you have a Jock coming up in a big spot like that, and it really helps that he's kind of a high energy guy, so there was kind of no doubt he was gonna be going up there hacking, because, you know, he's never really struck me as the, you know, as the pitch comes, slap the ball the other way type. He's going up there to tank it, and he absolutely crushed that ball, you know, got the entire dugout fired up. And I think that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game. It's like, you know, they kept grinding at bats. Going into the fourth inning, what was the nice thing that they had going for them is that through four innings, like, they were really getting Scherzer's pitch count up. They were still working deep at bats. Even if they weren't, like, you know, putting the ball in play with a lot of authority against them, just making him work for a lot of indifferent at bats. And, you know, in that inning, it just kind of they eventually got to him. You know, Riley had a really good at bat to draw that walk. Jock tanks that one, and all of a sudden it's a tie game. And then, you know, just one batter later, just in the fifth inning, they managed to run Scherzer out of the game. So that felt like at least the Braves had a pretty good shot.
Yeah, I mean, the fifth inning was kind of fireworks, despite there not being too many fireworks. It was interesting. Like, on one hand, when the Braves are pitching, they go to Minter for Chavez. And I saw some people that are frustrated by this because Chavez threw six pitches and the fourth and looked good. And also because Minter's coming in with two righties up at the top of the order. Granted, they are good righties. And Minter, I think I have more confidence in him than most of the other guys in the bullpen. But of course, he comes in and walks Betts on four pitches and kind of scares everybody. They end up having to intentionally walk Will Smith to get to Gavin Lux, which was not like a no-brainer decision. It ended up working out pretty well. They get out of that with no damage, given how Minter was not his best either. That was fortunate. I mean, did you have any issue with going to Minter not because it was early necessarily, but just because of the situation, because of, you know, Chavez was looking okay, and because of the situation at the top of the order with, I guess you wanted to face Seager, is maybe the thinking?
Yeah, I actually had zero problems with it. One is that the idea of pitching Jesse Chavez against the top of the Dodgers order is in itself, like regardless of what three players they decide to put out there,
yeah,
is a pretty terrifying thing. I mean, look, and Jesse was great in that inning. He's been surprisingly good for the Braves this year. But, you know, you're playing with fire a little bit, I think, with that particular situation. And more importantly, Mookie's a guy who traditionally is, like, slightly reverse splits. And I don't think that there's a good way to pitch to that part of the lineup. So if you think that Seager's the guy that's going to kill you, then you have, bringing in the lefty makes a ton of sense, right? Because, like, if you have Mookie, Seager, and Trey Turner, what reliever in your bullpen are you, like, super thrilled about throwing against those three guys? The answer is there's not a lot of them, right? So at least, like, you know, there are reasons to say, you know what, if Mookie is slightly worse against lefties, you know, obviously walking him on four pitches, that's not you bring in the wrong reliever problem. That's your reliever not doing his job problem. And, you know, then you get put in a relatively decent position against Seager. Are the base runners a little bit disconcerting? Yeah, and certainly Minter was kind of all over the place for, you know, big chunks of that inning. But in terms of, like, the decision making, like, I was perfectly fine with it. And I was a little bit surprised. I think that me being kind of aware of, you know, Mookie being kind of a revert split sort of guy, like, was kind of initially apparent to me. And I don't know if a lot of folks were aware of that. And more importantly, I just, like, at the end of the day, I didn't think that there were a lot of great options there. So,
yeah,
you know, just if that's the live arm that you want to put up in that situation, like if they had brought in Matzik or if they had brought in Luke Jackson, all those would have been fine for me. I just, like, the idea of Jesse Chavez is, like, your go-to guy to put out the fire. I'm just never going to be comfortable with that. It's just not going
to
be true.
Well, something I plan to bring up later on, but it's actually a good bridge now, is in the sixth inning, they went to Jacob Webb, and he hadn't pitched in 15 days, and I kind of think he's always been kind of too maligned by some corners of Braves fandom. But, I mean, I literally wrote down in the notes, who else is it supposed to be? And that's kind of what you were saying a second ago. Like, this entire playoff run so far, they've been pretty lucky or fortunate or at least had some stuff break their way to where they've only had to kind of rely on their guys that they actually trust. They've been able to get through using Matzik, Luke Jackson, and Will Smith with a sprinkling of Minter, and that's been enough because the starting pitching has been so awesome to this point. That's not going to happen in a full seven-game series. And beyond Minter, like, you can tell me who you prefer, but none of these guys are on the trustworthy list right now. I mean, later in this game, Chris Martin pitched in the eighth inning of this game today.
Which I saw that, and I was just like, full clinch mode.
Well, if this is a regular season, honestly, I mean, yeah, we could spend 10 minutes on this. Like, it's actually a pretty on-brand sticker thing to throw out a guy because you're down two in the eighth instead of tied or whatever.
I mean, and it worked out. It did work. It's hard to be upset. Like, I was even surprised he was on the NLCS roster.
Well, period. Yeah, I mean, kind of too. But, I mean, again,
the biggest issue in this whole game is that Ian Anderson threw three innings.
Well, that's the I could say. They were due. They were due for one of those. But you said it. I said it now. Like, I know that nobody's super comfortable with guys like Martin and Webb and Chavez. But, like, you can't get through this entire series with four relievers. Like, they're going to have to go deeper, and those are the guys they have on the roster. I mean,
yep.
They brought in Enoa a little bit more aggressively early in the playoffs, and he didn't pitch great, and fans were really mad about it. So it's like, all right, who do you want? If you don't want Webb, like, you can't throw Jackson, Matzik, and Smith for six innings every night. Those guys can't all throw two innings every night. It's just not going to be the case. So, I mean, you can have your preferences for sure. Like, Maybe you strategize. And honestly, I kind of like the way they used Webb in this game because he faced the bottom of the order. Like, he didn't look fantastic, but, like, if you're going to bring him in clean and bring him in facing guys who are not Mookie Betts and Corey Seager. Like, the Dodgers are pretty loaded even in the bottom half of the order, but at least be strategic in that. So, I mean, trust me, we're not above criticizing bullpen management by any means, but the overarching thing is, like, you have to put somebody on the mound.
I will say this, and I can say this pretty definitively. I think that Brian Snicker outmanaged Dave Roberts in this game.
I think that's probably true. Even if I didn't love everything that Snicker did, no. I think Roberts had a bad night, so I think I probably agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, that Dodgers bullpen is pretty good. And bringing in Julio Urias out of the bullpen, like again, like that guy's been like getting used to death, and
He's also starting game four now again. Like they announced that. So
I don't think that was a good decision. I think that they have guys in that bullpen that can handle lefties reasonably well. And this was pointed out by others. So that, like, that's not like a new thought or anything like that. But the idea of like bringing in Urias, who like he isn't a bullpen arm, right? He's been a starter, and to like bring him in and just expect him just to like to blow away a bunch of lefties was kind of asking for trouble, and now it kind of not only puts them in a bad spot because they lost this game, but now they're kind of in a worse spot for later on in the series too. I didn't love that. Overall just not a great situation for the Dodgers put themselves in, and I genuinely think, I mean, like obviously Chris Martin pitching the eighth inning isn't like an ideal situation, but in a situation where Ian Anderson only throws three innings, like Chris Martin was going to be pitching to some guys who know how to hit in some, like, you know, if he was pitching in the seventh or the sixth or wherever, like there's going to be some guys that could have feasibly given him trouble. And he was perfectly fine in the situation he came up in. But, you know, at the end of the day, like a lot of these guys were going to be pitching in this game regardless.
Yep.
And I am perfectly fine with where these guys were deployed. And, you know, the Braves took advantage of the opportunities when they got them.
Right. And obviously we are willing to criticize when things are not what we like to see, but
absolutely.
one of the themes of this series, and again, it's the Braves are leading the series 2-0, so it hasn't quote unquote mattered, but one of the things that you notice when you look at these rosters is that the Dodgers have so much more depth. Like the Braves bench is like pretty terrible on paper at the moment. Like their pinch hitting options are just nil right now without Soler. They just don't have anybody to pinch hit. Like
I have seen worse Braves postseason benches.
That's true. You're right about that, but it's still bad. I mean, it's like degrees of bad. I agree. But I mean, you're throwing out Arcia looked like a pitcher when he came in to hit today.
He was awful.
Like Adrianza like struck out. I mean, they just don't have guys. So, and the same thing in the bullpen. So like they're smoke and mirrorsing this thing right now. But that's one of the things that you notice in the series is like, they don't have, there's not a lot of depth to work with, and they're kind of just kind of managing around that. All right, before we get back into sort of what transpired and kind of go through this thing and then look ahead to game three, a word from our sponsors on the podcast today.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Eric, let's talk about Max Scherzer leaving early. We kind of referenced it earlier, but I think just broadly speaking, being able to chase a Cy Young Award-winning monster before he finishes the fifth inning and doing it in a tie game on a day when Ian Anderson did not have his stuff, all of that is a pretty big win. I mean, they weren't winning the game Absolutely. When he left, but like that situation, you have to just take it. I mean, if you can basically say Anderson pitches Scherzer to a draw, quote unquote, in terms of like impact, you got to just take that and run.
No, absolutely. And again, I didn't think they're going to pull him out that early because he was only like 70 something pitches, right?
It was pretty early. I got some texts about that.
It was like he was at 70 something pitches, but you know, there was a lot of talk like his velo was down and like he didn't look awesome, and the Braves were starting to like put together some better at bats and hitting the ball a little harder against them. So I kind of understand the impulse, but at the same time, like, do you really want in this game after a bullpen game to all of us, like, immediately go to your bullpen, which, I mean, the back end of their bullpen is very good, but I'm not sure if I'd, like, be like, you know what, my bullpen will be able to carry this for 4 2/3, you know, the rest of the way, no problem after a bullpen game. I would have tried to, like, at least get him through the fifth, but, you know, I understand what, you know, the quick hook in this situation where you want to make sure that you're taking advantage of every single game because they all matter so much. But I do think that the hook was a little bit early, even though I admit that, like, Scherzer did not look awesome. And as the, like, in that fifth inning particularly, he was not looking particularly good. So I sort of get it, but at the same time, I probably would have kept him in.
Right. I mean, I think of myself as pretty aggressive in getting starters out of the game in the playoffs. I think I'm definitely on that side of things. And even then, I was a little bit surprised just because of who he is. I agree with you. He was not his.
I'm surprised he went willingly.
He didn't seem to be ready to fight in the way that he normally would be either, which is maybe that's indicative of why it took him out. He just didn't have his best stuff or whatever. But noteworthy, and I just want to always say, like, look, yes, the Braves then trailed later on in this game, but if you just stop the game there and say, is this a good situation or a bad situation for the Braves, you got to say good when it's tied and Scherzer's leaving the game. That's a pretty good situation to be in. All right, we'll sort of fast forward here. You know, Webb had some issues in the sixth, but gets out of it without damage. Thanks in part to Albert Pujols looking like he's 140 years old instead of 40, however old he is. He looked awful in that play appearance against Donovan.
He got dismissed by Matzik. I mean, you know, it was like a 5-pitch at bat or something like that, but it definitely felt worse than that. It just felt like he was just
the Wash Chronicles.
Your life.
Yeah, it was,
well, you
it
know,
was not good.
You know, he's like, old. It's the ghost of Albert Pujols. Yeah.
Yeah. He's an old man. That worked out well. Actually, that was a credit to Snicker. I wanted to at least give him that one because basically the Dodgers announced a pinch hitter. Snicker went to Matzik. I think he probably realized it was going to be Pujols in that spot. If he didn't, I think it was pretty flagrantly obvious that that's what was going to happen. And I will take Matzik against Pujols in that spot when compared to Webb against a left-handed pinch hitter. So that worked out pretty well and all the way around. But from there, Matzik in his second inning of work, at least his second partial inning of work in the seventh, was not his best. So he walks Mookie Betts, gets two outs, then they had to actually give an intentional walk to Will Smith. They bring in Luke Jackson, who's been nails this season, as we've talked about a number of times, but he was not good in this game. He hits Justin Turner, gives up a two-run double to Chris Taylor. I say two-run double because...
double, unquote.
Listen, they call it a double. It's kind of similar to the Eddie Rosario walk-off, quote-unquote, single. But, yeah, I mean, Guillermo Heredia...
let's look at the exit velocities of those.
Oh,
two
sure.
Hits,
certainly, Rosario's was more well-earned, that's for sure. But... Guillermo Heredia, who I saw some people describing it as a defensive replacement. That's not really what that was. The game was tied. They weren't like trying to hold a lead at that point. Like he's just their fourth outfielder right now. Like they had to pull him in. If that had been Pache in center field, and that happened, then obviously it would have been funnier in some respects. But Heredia just had no chance to get there. Didn't play it well. Gets by him, and that. I wonder what you think about this. Do you think that two runs score anyway? Because I think they do. Even if he doesn't like it by, I think they probably score two runs there.
So if it's Heredia out there and he just plays the ball in front of him, I still think they both run score.
That's what I think too.
I think if Pache is out there, that ball's caught.
Okay, so that was my follow-up because, you know, again, they're not going to put Pache, whether you think about this or not, there is no scenario where Pache is playing in a tie game in the seventh inning unless there's an injury. It's not happening. Like, he's not coming in that spot.
As the roster is currently constructed, it is very clear that if, like, that sort of, you know, double switch weird stuff's happening,
it's Heredia.
Guillermo Heredia is going in first.
Yes.
That's just what's going to
happen.
Well,
they trust his bat more, and I think they probably should. He's a better hitter right now than Pache is at the major league level. Defensively, Pache is a lot better. I think we all kind of agree on that. But regardless, Pache's just kind of on this team to be, like, the 25th, 26th man defensive replacement. He pinch ran in this game, and that was his role. But I had the same thought as everybody else. Like, yeah, Pache would have been nice there, but especially in a tie game, they're just not going to do that in that spot. It wasn't even like it was a ninth inning. So,
yeah, you know, I mean, that was like kind of like a flare line drive.
It was ugly, though, by Heredia. It was a bad play.
Well, it was. I still think that even if he fields it cleanly, he's going to have a tough time stopping the second run from scoring.
Yes.
Like, it's going to take everyone's running, and, you know, he's going to have to make a really good throw on the run. Like, he has to pick that and just pitch it so cleanly, and I understand what he was trying to do. You either have to dive there,
or not.
You can't do what he did, which is kind of like, you know, trying.
And
to
that's
do
why it looks so bad that I think people are overstating the impact of the play, like because of how bad of a route slash approach he took. They didn't allow an extra run. I feel like the way it was being discussed was that cost them a run. And it really wasn't the case. Like, he either catches it and they don't score, he doesn't catch it and they score two runs, I think. So it's like...
I think it's pretty tough for him to get the stop the second run from scoring.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, sure. Like, he could have thrown him out. I mean,
if he picks it clean and, like, makes, a rifle throw to home, then sure, he could do it. But...
I just want to be at least a little bit careful with that, just because it was a bad defensive play. Like, I think we both agree on that. It was not very good the way he handled it. But the impact of it was not crazy.
The biggest part of that play that didn't get talked about enough is Jock Peterson got over to center field to back
to save the third run. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And if Heredia dives there and it gets past him, like, Jock's still there. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Like, unless, like, you know, like Heredia, like, you know, knocks it.
Kicks
into like left or whatever. Yeah, like, but like the biggest part of that play was Jock was right there, and you know, the runner that made it the third didn't have any interest whatsoever in trying to score that third run, because Jock would have gotten him because he was over there so fast. So like, hat tip to Jock there, because he, you know, that was a big part of that play.
Yeah, that was a good play by Jock. I'm glad you pointed that out. They avoided further damage. Luke gets a big strikeout with the bases loaded, and you know, I almost not forgotten about that, but it could have been 6-2, 7-2 real easy there if he let it spiral, and he didn't, which is that's ended up being a big play, obviously. The Dodgers at that point had left 10 guys on base through 7 innings, which came back to bite them.
It ended up being 20 in the game.
You're kidding me.
20. I'm looking at the left on base right now on the box.
Oh, Lord. Okay, that's a lot of those. So we talked about Martin pitching in the 8th. He actually pitched well, so we'll leave it there for now. And then the Braves make their second dent on the scoreboard, featuring Eddie Rosario. And this is what I like to call the Ron Washington inning. So funny.
Yep.
We love Wash on this podcast. Rosario singles, one of his four in this game. He goes to second on what was I would describe as a pretty risky play, down by two. He goes to second on a fly ball by Freddie. It wasn't that close, but I think a good throw, he probably is out at second base.
I agree. And like, Rosario's had some base running plays this season that have been questionable at best.
They worked, but
some of them didn't go well. So yeah. I'm the EY versus SNIT thing in terms of like aggressive base. I'm not even gonna call what Wash is aggressive base running. It's just like
green.
There's not even a decision made there. It's just, you know, go. If you want to make the turn, I mean, he'll send Travis d'Arnaud in a ground ball, on a short ground ball from first to try to run home. So that slide of Rosario's, that made the night for me. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how he was safe. I don't understand how he got around it. But
no, I mean, the combination, I mean, the odds of him being safe at second and home in that sequence, and by, obviously he ends up coming around after a single by Ozzie, and I thought it was another bad send by Wash. It ended up working. But honestly, the throw kind of beat him there, and he had this awesome slide. I don't know.
Yep.
Even watching the replay multiple times, it was just it was picture perfect. I mean, you can't really draw up any better than that.
And I don't blame the Dodgers at all for trying to replay it, because honestly, when they probably saw it, they're like, "There's no way."
I mean, I had the same thought live. I thought he was out live. I did. I mean, just I've got to be honest. I was like, I think he's out, and they called him safe. I'm like, all right, there's going to be a review. We all knew it was going to be reviewed, and then they showed the first replay, and I'm like, he's safe, man. Like, he's in there, and it was a great slide. Again, an aggressive send, as Wash just wants to do, but it worked. And you know, the thing is actually, that was crazy. And I think Ron Darling pointed out on the broadcast, and rightly so, Ozzie didn't get to second on that throw home, which he absolutely should have been at second base in that spot. And it almost bit them, because Riley hits the double, which was mashed, by the way. Austin Riley is, very strong.
That's a strong dude. Yeah.
107 miles an hour to left center. Ozzie is flying around. As everyone knows, he's very fast. But it's still like a fairly close play at the plate, whereas if he's at second, which is where he should have been, he scores standing up, and it's there's no drama at all. So it didn't matter, but I'm glad it didn't matter, because if Ozzie gets thrown out at the plate there, or if they don't score a run because he's not in second base, that's one that we could have circled. But in the end, they're running good right now.
So I have a theory here. I think that when Ozzie was running, that he thought there was no chance that Rosario was going to round third and head for home.
Maybe, I wouldn't blame
when
him.
When he saw the throw coming in, he might have thought that they were trying to get him, right?
I wouldn't blame
him. Just in the moment, like, and you don't want to make that out at second. Like, you really, really don't in that situation. Because then you have, like, you know, then you're it's just all around bad. And I think he might have gotten fooled a little bit in the moment in that situation. I'm not going to, like, dog on Ozzie too much. And he's usually the guy that will take an extra base at every available opportunity. I think that he thought that there's just no way that, like, Rosario was gonna be able to try to score on that. And, yeah, he did. It was kind of wild. And then Austin Riley, I don't even know what to say about him anymore. It's,
he's just out of his mind. I mean, we've talked about it. Scott and I laughed and ate even more crow last night on the podcast about Riley, and he's just been ridiculous all season long. He's been dialed in, and he keeps having big hit after big hit. I mean, that ball was, again, just smoked, and not hit, like, shallow. I mean, I think it flew, like, 380, 390 into left center and was just mashed. So a huge play there. They end up tying it in the eighth, and that sets up the roller coaster of the ninth inning. So let's get there now. What was in your mind, Eric, when the ball was flying through the air off Trey Turner's bat against Will Smith?
450 feet, 108 miles an hour off the bat. I was guessing it as I saw. I thought that ball was crushed.
Destroyed. 403 feet was the StatCast measurement. There was a Twitter account flying around that said it was out of the ballpark in every single park except for Truist Park, which Mike Petriello said was not true. So I trust Mike on that one, as he works for the league and has StatCast data up to his ears. So I'm going to think that's not true. But I will say this, it was gone in some ballparks, and it was gone at Truist Park a lot of the time. I think if it's like a day game or if it's in August, that ball's gone.
If there's a slight wind out, that ball's like in orbit. Like, it was crushed. And pretty much the peak Will Smith experience, the first pitch he sees to a really good hitter and he just gets annihilated.
The first pitch, it was literally laugh out loud funny. It was literally funny.
The ball was crushed and then the rest of the inning was fine.
He struck out Will Smith. It was the Gemini Man experience for the second out. But no, I mean, obviously I've been a little bit higher on Will Smith than other people have. I've been a little bit more defensive of him. It is still hilarious, like, so on brand, so funny. Like, even in the tension of that moment, like, everyone is, it's playoff baseball. Everybody's on the edge of their seat. I quite literally laughed out loud at just the synergy of Will Smith allowing the deepest possible flyout on the first pitch of the ninth inning. It was the funniest thing I've seen in a while. So it worked. It was fine. He got out of it. He's been good, actually. His results have been great the last, like, 3 weeks. So
And the last few games, like, other than that pitch, he's been like,
yeah, he's been good.
It's not even being results oriented. Like, he's been legitimately good.
Oh, he's
like
that, he killed that, Smith.
All those sliders, and they were all just back foot, and like Smith just had nothing for him, nothing. Just, and I was like, okay, all right, that works. And then,
well, he's good. He's good, man. When he's dialed in, there's a reason why Will Smith is making $13 million a year, and it's because when he's good, he's really good. Okay, it's time to, before we can celebrate again, it's time to talk about the beginning of the bottom of the ninth, which was interesting.
I was heated, Brad.
Yeah, I was pretty mad too. D'Arnaud shatters a bat with singles. That was fortunate. They go to Pache, which he's their best pinch runner, but the combination of going to Pache to run and also asking Dansby Swanson, he of 30 home runs, to bunt against a guy throwing 103, was not my favorite. I'm not a bunt guy anyway. I'll try to not go on a full rant here, but I truly don't understand that beyond just the very, very old school move the runner over. I understand the principle. Before anybody yells at me, I know why people bunt. It's to move the runner over. I get it. The combination of all those things between Dansby being really more of a power bat at this point in time, plus Gratterall, plus burning a pinch runner when you're not going to let him run, all just lunacy. And I mean, it won't always be this clean, but the bunt working out very poorly also kind of added to it.
All right, you are a lot nicer about it than I'm gonna be.
I was trying. I mean, I'm sure you heard me trying to couch it a little bit.
I'm not even gonna pretend. So I don't mind Pache pinch running. I do mind that you're not gonna be aggressive with him if you're gonna have a pinch runner out there. And I especially have issues with Dansby Bunton for a number of reasons. One, Dansby's a fastball hitter, and that's all this guy throws. Two, the guy throws 103 with arm side run, so that squaring run and bunting like is more likely to kill the batter than actually result in something good happening. And you're doing it in the hopes that a guy who started the game on the bench in Guillermo Heredia is going to be able to do something about it, when Dansby is far more likely to be able to do something, again, a fastball hitter, and you're squaring him around to bunt. And then you don't get the bunt down to where it's a sacrifice bunt. They actually get the force at second. All of it was bad. Don't sacrifice bunt unless you're – like, as long as they're going to have pitchers hitting, then I don't like it. But, like, it's definitely better than what the most of the alternatives are with pitchers hitting at this point. But when you have Dansby up there against that guy, it's actively terrible. Like, actively awful. And – I honestly thought that, like, I was going to think about this at the end of the game, where, like, what could have been really, really dicey extra innings, where, you know, all of a sudden, like, you know, we're going to see, like, Drew Smyly having to throw meaningful innings.
Oh, I was ready for it. I was ready for Drew Smyly. I was ready.
Yeah. And then I'm thinking, you know, you have a guy who can hit fastballs against a guy who throws only fastballs. And, like, and Dansby was not going to, like, swing at that, like, stuff at his eyes that was being thrown at, like, Darnell and things like that, and that earlier in the at-bat. So, like, you potentially can get another runner on base, and instead you bunt in that situation where, like, bunting is almost, like, is such a low percentage play. I was not happy. That was the play. That was the one call that I was, like, genuinely upset about.
Yeah, I thought that was the worst decision of the night by Snit, was to have him bunt there for all the reasons we just laid out. It didn't work out, and honestly, it's kind of funny now, but Gratterall's throw to second base was not a good throw. That could have been center field pretty easily. It was a nice, a nice pick, which is foreshadowing, I suppose, because you know, one key thing that's gone under talked about is after this play. So there's a guy at first and one out still. Heredia grounds out, but Dansby gets to second base, and that was huge. Because you need him to be on second base to score on when Rosario ambushed the first pitch. And Dave Roberts goes away from Gratterall, goes to Kenley Jansen. I don't hate going to your closer there. He's your best guy in your mind. But Rosario, wisely, in a veteran move, just kind of ambushes one and smashes it. I mean, he hit the ball very, very hard. I think
he almost took Kenley's head off.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it was almost... at least, you know, deflected by Jansen, but it wasn't. I do think, I'm not trying to pour cold water on it, I do think that Seager needs to make that play. Like, I think that he needs to at least, like, knock the ball down. Like, he tried to barehand it for reasons passing understanding. I don't know what he was trying to do there. Again,
trying to lose his hand. That's pretty much
the I mean, credit to Rosario. That ball was smoked, so it's not like he didn't earn the base hit. But I don't know what Seager was doing. It was not a good play by Corey Seager. And, you know, running on contact, and they score, and that's the end of that. Did you think, I mean, it has to be scored. I think it has to be scored a single, and it was. But I just thought that, like, more often than not, Seager's got to at least knock that ball down. I mean, I don't care at this point because the Braves won the game. But I was surprised it was, like, not more of a focus. I think I was like, all right. I mean, clearly it was the heroics of Rosario, but I thought it was kind of a bad defensive play. I don't know.
I think that it was like, it's kind of like the bad route towards a ball that you're probably never going to catch anyway. Does that make sense?
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, I don't know if, like, even if he does what he's supposed to do in that situation, he gets it. Like, 'cause that ball was knuckling away from him and, like, was annihilated. So I'm not so certain that play gets made regardless. And I think the result is probably the same. I think it's fair to say that, you know, Corey Seager, like, people can wonder what might have been if he made a fantastic play on that. But I think that it would have taken a really good play to get that ball, right?
Yeah, that's
based on where he was positioned.
He was in a weird spot. I mean, they were kind of shifting as well. Like, he wouldn't have been there where he was if they weren't. So it's like, another used to it, but he also was in a spot where he's not always used to playing. Like, he's like right, it's like right behind the bag. I mean, he hit the ball right over the bag, basically.
Yeah. And it's that, and like the, how the ball comes off the bat, like, you know, again, like it was, that ball was not like a, if you watch it, and I'd have to look at it again just to like make sure, but it did look like it was kind of knuckling away from him.
A little
so
bit.
So he honestly might have just, it might have just thought that he just had a better play on it, and he was, you were blocked by Jensen too. So like, you know, it's kind of hard, like when the ball's hit that hard and you have like 0.2 seconds to react to it and you just don't have a good view of it. Like the, like those sorts of things happen, but he did not make the correct move towards the ball.
No.
But at the same time, like, I'm not sure if that would have mattered. I'm just not.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I think I'm maybe picking on him too much, but obviously we talked about it at the beginning, but Rosario, credit to him, 4 hits. He was awesome in this game, and every starter had a hit in the game except for Freddie. Freddie is a little bit lost right now.
Seven strikeouts through his first eight.
Yeah, I mean, he had seven straight strikeouts. He finally hit the ball on his last at bat today. It's kind of crazy because it's like right after his biggest hit maybe ever, like the home run in the Brewers series, and it was like, all right, he hits this thing and celebrates, and now he looks like he's completely out of sorts. But I'm not worried about Freeman. It's just worth noting. The bullpen has been very good again. You know, obviously they had a little bit of a hiccup today with Matzik and Jackson, but those guys have been lights out. And even if you factor that in, they threw 6 innings with 2 runs, which you got to kind of take. So
against this Dodgers lineup, you're just not going to get like, they're going to give up some runs. Like you just look at it and you're just like, how do you like shut out that lineup for 6 innings? Like, I just don't see how it's possible. Now the Dodgers did their absolute damnedest to try to put a bunch of runs on the board. There's a lot of base runners in this game for the Dodgers.
Yep.
They drew 9 walks in the game, I think. Yet 9. You know, in addition, yeah.
9 walks. Yeah. It's honestly, it's kind of hard to think that they only scored 4 runs in this game with all the opportunities they had. Cause I mean, 9 walks, was there 2 hit by pitches and or 1?
And say that one more time.
2 hit by pitches or 1? I mean, they had stolen bases.
Justin Turner got hit by a pitch, and
yeah, they had 4. They also had 4 stolen bases.
Like force outs where, like, you know, the guy gets on and all that other stuff. And you know, like, by the way, hat tip to some defensive plays, particularly by one Eddie Rosario, who made a really good play at a Trey Turner ball.
Glove man, Eddie Rosario.
I could, of all the guys to make that play in the outfield, I couldn't believe it was him.
That's well said. Anything else you want to say about tonight? Because obviously we'll look ahead at the end of the podcast to Game 3 and beyond. But, you know, we talked about it. Awesome win. Balanced win. Clearly the hero is Rosario, but a lot of other secondary heroes around the way. You know, Riley, the bullpen, etc. Anything else you want to say about this one?
Yeah. You know, generally speaking, in terms of, like, the best postseason games for a team or whatever, like, they only really come in series wins. Like, you don't really think of the, like, the great wins when you, like, lose 4 games to 1 or whatever. But if the Braves advance to the World Series, like, this is, like, probably one of the better and, like, far more fascinating games in, like, certainly recent Braves postseason history. And, like, you can make a case that, like, going back into the 90s, like, you circle this one as, like, wow, this was an unbelievable game. A lot of weird stuff happened, but a lot of really cool stuff happened, too, from both sides. And I think that, you know, overall, like, this is one you circle.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. And we'll see how things change in either direction on Tuesday. So day off Monday for travel, a long flight ahead for all parties involved, 3,000 miles or so out to L.A. Shouts to Bill Plachke, making himself lots of friends in the Atlanta area on this.
Yeah, he's going to have a fun day tomorrow where basically everyone on Braves Twitter is just going to be in his mentions constantly, which is exactly what he wanted, by the way.
He's kind of a legendary stir of the pot, so I'm not surprised. It's just kind of funny.
He could just cover the sport and probably do just as well, but, you know, here we are.
He's a columnist. He's a capital C columnist back in the back in L.A. But, you know, aside from the obvious implications of the game itself and the Dodgers having to really have some urgency at this point, it's Morton versus Buehler in Game 3, and that is a heck of a matchup on paper. You have Morton now fully rested, two more days off. He's been awesome in the postseason and really the last several seasons. Walker Buehler is one of the best pitchers in the league. He was like a top 6 or 7 guy this year in the National League, a mid-2s ERA. He's good against kind of everyone. Playoff ERA is good, career 2.50. Like, he's a very, very, very good pitcher. He's not quite Max Scherzer in terms of like stature in the league, but he's not much different in terms of the practical applications in 2021. So a headline-worthy matchup on the mound, and you know, goes without saying, but the Dodgers kind of have to have this one, and the Braves can put a stranglehold on it on some level if they win this one. I will say the early betting market is leaning toward the Dodgers. Not surprising, games in LA. But what are you looking for in Game 3? Because it's still a day and a half away at this point, but a big one, obviously.
I think Morton's going to be awesome, just because he has been awesome. I think you will just put together a really good outing. The trick for the Braves in this one is what they did against Scherzer in this one, which is getting him out of the game early. And I think that this is a Braves team that has had success against him. Now, the most impactful swing that's happened against Marco Buehler from the Braves is from a guy who's currently injured. So, you know, we can't be too excited about that. But at the same time, we may see Ronnie. I'm glad that – I was so happy when they introduced him before game one. Like
He did some media today. He did like a full press conference, I think, because he talked to I know he talked to DOB. It was in his story that he wrote, so. Yeah, Ronnie's back around for a while. It's good.
Yeah. We've missed you, Ronnie. Come back soon. But I think what has to happen in that game is now that you've had two games where the Dodgers have had to like pull out the stops with their bullpen and they've lost both of those games, they get a day off, which is like a non-zero consideration here. But setting up the rest of the series is that if they can run up Buehler's pitch count and just get him out of the game and kind of make the Dodgers have to make some like tough bullpen decisions. If that happens, if Buehler pitches less than five innings in game three, regardless of the result of game three, I think the Braves win the series. I think it like matters that much. Because,
sure, I mean, wow, just plant your flag right here on the podcast. It's like 1 a.m.
You know, now if he goes five or more, then like maybe you can preserve some arms or whatever.
What if he throws 4 2/3?
I said what I said.
Okay, all right.
Look, it's on the record now. If he pitches less than five innings,
I wrote it down.
If he pitches less than five innings, I think the Braves win this series. And because in that situation, I don't think that they pull him from a game that they're winning 5-1, for example.
Sure.
So like that means they're probably in a decent position to win that game. And even if they don't win that game, like you're really starting to tax the bullpen. And I do think that Morton is going to like throw significant innings, which will allow the Braves to kind of maybe give a guy or two or some rest. I think that that's what it comes down to in this series. I in terms of picking like handicap that game, I don't know how you handicap that game, Morton versus Buehler. These teams are like these games have been close in like really weird situations already. And when you have those two guys on the mound, you flip a coin for me. But in terms of how like the dynamics of this series is that if he throws less than five innings, the Braves are going to win this series.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. If there's a way to bet on that, I'm not sure there is, but if there is a way, someone will find it.
Oh, there is now. You know, noted betting expert Brad Rollins about to be taking some bets on Twitter.com.
Yeah, we'll take some action.
Send some tweets at BT Roland.
Yeah.
I was looking at
the market, and the Braves are favored to win the series now for the first time in the betting market. 538 has the Braves at 64% to win the series. Fangraphs is 69.2, a very nice figure. And yeah, I don't know how to feel about. I mean, I guess I'll ask you: does that feel like the right range? Is it too low based on a 2-0 lead? You know, this is a weird one because they're going back to LA for three. People have to be reminded this. It's a 2-3-2. Format in baseball, which is not how other sports do this thing, but I'm not sure what it even means. Like my favorite / least favorite memory of this is the Braves winning the first two games in New York in 96 and then coming home and losing all three. That's why I remembered it more than anything else. But does that seem right to you? Does that seem low to you, like projection wise at this point?
If I was just eyeballing it and like I don't have a projection model that I have like put forth in front of me or anything like
you
that.
You don't?
No, I go to Ivan for that sort of stuff. Okay. And I guarantee you he has one.
Yes,
I'll bet all the money in my pockets that he does. I would probably guess 60, 65. I have a lot of respect for this Dodgers team. I picked the Dodgers to win this in six, by the way. And they're like, I'm not on pace to do particularly well with that prediction, which, by the way, I'll be thrilled if that happens. But, I picked the Dodgers in six. I have a lot of respect for this team. They, that, that off, that lineup, I understand that they've been inconsistent at times this season, and in particular during the series, but I have a lot of respect for what they can do. I mean, they have the top of their pitching, their rotation is legitimately good, and they have some good guys in their bullpen. I have a lot of respect for that team, so I'm like, it's not going to shock me if they like come out of the gates like and go wild out there in LA, right? But I think that the Braves have two games in their pocket, so like they should be favored. It's a big difference between up 2-0 versus, you know, tying the series, and then all of a sudden it's a best of five series in LA with LA having three games the first three games. It's a big difference. So
well, yeah, they have to win. Practically speaking, they have to win 4 out of 5, and that's that makes it hard. I mean, obviously we saw similarly last year in the same series, like it can be done. But the Braves are now the favorites with the capital F in this series. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win it, but they certainly should be the favorites. They are the favorites. And you go into LA now, and they don't have any margin for error. You have a little bit on your side. They have none. They cannot afford really any kind of step backs when you got to win 4 out of 5 games against a quality opponent, and the Braves are obviously a quality opponent.
And I'll say this. The big difference between last year and this year is that there was basically no days off. In the series last year.
Oh, yeah,
it was very clear that the Braves were gassed at the end of that series. That is not the case this year. And, you know, when you have those days off built in, you can get bullpen guys some rest. You can do just a little bit more planning and managing of like how guys get rest, how guys get medical treatment and all that other stuff. I think that there's a regular format like this year. If that happened last year, the Braves win that game in six games, win that series in six games. Whereas I you know, and this year we'll see. I'm already on record saying the Dodgers winning in six, and like, you know, going back on it at this point, like it's a little silly. With the caveat that if Buehler pitches less than five, like you'll be hearing from me that I think the Braves are going to take it.
The most like distinct prediction you may have ever made on this podcast. I really enjoyed that as a kicker to this show. And I guess you heard it here first. If I forget this, I have it written down, and we can talk about it again at some point on this podcast.
I imagine if he throws 4 1/3, I'm going to be getting some tweets, and that's perfectly
fine. I cannot wait for him to throw 4 2/3 shutout innings, and then it's like 8-0 Dodgers when he leaves.
There's some early favorites in the betting markets as to who's going to be sending those tweets. By the way,
Joe Carson will be sending. Will be the clubhouse leader. Hi, Joe. Joe loves the show. He likes to needle us a little bit. At any rate, we've covered a lot of ground, Eric. It's very late on the East Coast where we were both recording. Obviously, we talked about it a lot, but the Braves, it's been a lot of fun. That's kind of been the theme here. Eddie Rosario, Ron Washington. I can't even say his name without laughing in the best possible way.
I was laughing so. It was such a Ron Washington send too.
Just the way he carries himself too after it, like he's not even like there's no pressure at all. Like, he's just like, oh, that was fine.
That was what was gonna happen.
Oh, yeah. It was incredible. So yeah, Braves lead 2-0 in the series. We'll have much, much more to come. I believe you will probably hear from Sean Coleman on the off day. To sort of gather any news that comes up between now and game 3, which arrives late on Tuesday. Actually, it's early on Tuesday. That's actually something I wanted to point out, is that it's a 5-ish p.m. Eastern time start on Tuesday. The rest of the series is like 7:30 or 8, but this is the one earlier game in the series, is game 3. So keep that in mind. It's a afternoon tilt in Los Angeles. Other than that, we'll always be here, so please subscribe to the podcast. Eric, where can people find you on Twitter and elsewhere?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at leprechaun with a K. You can follow my work over on talkingchop.com, where I'm sure I'm going to be kind of chipping in here and there with, you know, coverage. A bulk of what you're going to be seeing or hearing from me is going to be on this podcast stream. I will say that I thoroughly enjoyed my family vacation up there in Cooperstown, New York. But at the same time, like it definitely kind of stunk. I missed talking to you about baseball, playoff baseball, podcast with you and Scott. It's a lot of work. Obviously, we're sitting here, it's almost 1 a.m. We're sitting here talking about a game where we're both exhausted from a lot of travel and other things going on. But I missed doing it with the Brewers series. So I was happy to be able to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, it was fun. I appreciate you doing it as always. And we will have podcasts after every game with some combination of us, whether it's the two of us or me and Scott or Scott and Eric or Sean and Eric or whatever we do. There'll be a podcast after every game. I can assure you of that. And you can get it all at one place. Also, Eric is one of the co-hosts of the Road to Atlanta podcast. We have Daily Hammer. There's a lot of content in this feed, as well as the written side at talkjump.com. So support us via whichever podcast platform you like to listen to shows. And you know, subscribing on those platforms is huge. Reviews, comments on the website, all that fun stuff. And thank you, as everyone, for listening to the podcast. Thanks to Eric. We'll see you all at some point, but definitely after Game 3.